Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Breakfast Bites, part of the Stadium McGill Network and brought to you by our partner, Norris & Norris PA, out of Lake City, Florida. Norris & Norris PA is a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. You can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, how's it going? We got our guest, Edgar Thompson at the Orlando Sentinel. How are you doing, Edgar?
Hey, fellas. Enjoying you guys' show. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, we're trying to.
It's very good.
Thank you, Edgar.
Yeah, you guys know your stuff, and you're putting it out early, man. That's smart. I was talking to Mark Long, my podcast partner, and I'm like, I tell you, man, that Sunday early Sunday space would be nice to get involved on that, especially when there's so much outrage going on, right?
There's a lot to be outraged about.
I see. And behind you. Fill me in on this before we get going. Fill me in. I mean, you look like you're like a Q-tip sitting there between that. I mean, barely see you. There you are.
Well, I got to make sure all the people see that our former fearless leader, Billy Napier, he's taken the black flag mentality up to Athens. Mm-hmm. No word on if he's driving Ubers up there or if he's actually doing coaching or if he's in line to succeed Mike Bobo as the next offensive coordinator of the Georgia Bulldogs. But word on the street, according to those at On Three, is that he was up in Athens just giving them a little visit before they play Texas. And Kirby, who everybody knows, is one to always tell the truth and never stretch the truth and never lie or be a hypocrite or anything, says that they're all just friends and they go way back. And it was nothing more than that.
It's a brotherhood, Will, don't you understand?
But they were on staff together, in fairness, for a good while in Alabama.
And that's fine.
And he is from Chatsworth, which is like 2 hours from Georgia. But he did grow up a Georgia fan, too, as I'm sure everyone knows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's with hiring these Georgia coaches like Muschamp, Todd Grantham, Billy Napier? I don't know. As a football traditionalist, it makes me sick because I want the people like Steve Spurrier who are just, you know, they hate Georgia as much as we do. Like when Jackson and I went to this event before Florida, Georgia, and it's so clear from these alumni from the 90s and even some from the 2000s that they obviously are friends with the Georgia guys now, but they are not buddy-buddy. It's not, you know, blow the game and then smile with your pal right after it. Maybe they go have, you know, drinks with them after, you know, a few hours or something, but it's driving me crazy that they don't care nearly as much as the fans do that, like, we hate Georgia, we hate Florida State, we hate Tennessee, we hate LSU. And that's the way it should be in college football. What separates college football from the NFL is the rivalries and the pageantry and the tradition. And, you know, they always claim like the Steelers and the Ravens hate each other, but, you know, a player can be on the Steelers 1 year and the Ravens on the next and nobody blinks an eye just because that's how the NFL works. And it's not supposed to work like that in college football. You're not supposed to have former head coaches going to the arch rival, you know, less than a month later and giving them intel on other SEC teams. Like, he should be rooting against them and apologizing to Gator Nation for what he put us through for the last 3.5 years. And he can't even write some letter thanking the fans who sold out the last 16 games for him. It makes me sick.
Will, if I can interject real quick, I thought of this off the cuff. There might be flaws in this argument. When Mike White went to Georgia, we cheered because we hated him so much as the coach of Gator basketball. We were like, thank God, take him, leave. But the coach we didn't like because he was so bad over 4 years, we were begging to be fired, is fired. And then he goes a couple weeks later and visits campus. I'm sure there's flaws in that argument. Well, what's the difference there? He's gone. If he's visiting, whatever, he's gone.
He had like a little bit more success and he wasn't, you know, us against the world mentality anymore. And he didn't have the stupid black flag mentality and he didn't
left the coach
all the time. But then he stunks. It is a little hypocritical. I understand it, but it would be like if Mike White went to Kentucky, like then I would be like, oh my goodness, like Denzel Aberdeen type crash out. Then
it
I would really
it
care.
It certainly helped that Georgia paid us a few million dollars to take Mike White out of our hands. So a little bit different.
It would be if Napier went to like Oklahoma or something. Like that's basically what Mike White did.
It's also November 11th when he goes and visits them. He was coaching Florida on October 20th or whatever date it was before he got fired. Like, you're 30 days removed of coaching your guys. They're all still playing games, still have three games left. And he's going to Athens to see his old buddy. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's a terrible look. It's a scumbag move. And good riddance to that guy.
Edgar, aren't you glad you asked?
There's a lot of passion on this pod. It probably wasn't great optics.
Like, have you ever seen anything like this, Edgar? You've gone through a lot of coaching searches in your time covering the Gators or the NFL. I mean, has any coach you've seen during the regular season go visit another program, much less a rival, you know, less than 30 days?
Well, if we go through them, so Zook got fired and he coached the team and beat Florida State and they whipped South Carolina. Muschamp kept coaching the team. I forget the results, but the Randy Shannon interim was pretty much a debacle, but McElwain did just kind of fade into oblivion and Dan Mullen went underground completely. So yeah, these guys didn't just pop up, you know, in Athens or at another SEC locale that's an arch rival of Florida. It's not ideal. I don't know what he was doing. It's a good picture of Billy though.
Optics and PR have never been his thing.
No, but he, in fairness, the guy does live in Georgia, and who knows, he could have been driving up that way to see his mom or whatever.
Will, I have no idea. No, Edgar, that's what this is really about. If he would have released a thank you Gator Nation note, he will be okay, but Will's still waiting on that.
I don't know. I probably would have ripped him for not, you know, saying something correctly. Or
probably just using ChatGPT for his farewell.
He probably would have said we were dangerous to being close, and I would have lost it again.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, Dev, you've switched up your background from our defending national champions. Where are you currently at, Dev?
I am in the I drove, woke up at 6 o'clock this morning, loaded the family up into a rental minivan, and drove to Mississippi. So I'm currently, I knew that I was close when I started smelling the burnt rubber and gas station hot dogs in the air. And I am here for the next couple days, looking forward to going and scouting out the next coach of the Florida Gators.
Yeah, Will mentioned earlier, you know, Gator fans are looking for that Lane Kiffin, that Steve Spurrier type of head coach. And we all know Lane Kiffin is that kind of guy. Edgar, I think you had a story released today that can – Kiffin B. Spurrier 2.0 at Florida. Just tell us about the games that little gamesmanship that Kiffin's already playing this week with the SEC teleconference you mentioned before the show.
Oh, my Lord. So today I was going to go on there and I wanted to dig in a little bit about like kind of what compels or inspires him to be such a presence in social media. So he's got 737,000 X/ Twitter followers. Next is Kirby in SEC, 467. No other coach is more than 190, Shane Beamer. So he's got the biggest footprint by far, and even more significant than a two-time national championship coach. And it's because he just, you know, he gives the people what they want. He's got the needle going at all times. This retweet of DJ Lagway getting benched was epic. It was like, hold on, what's going on here? I mean, I thought it was like a joke for a second. Yeah, the guy's fantastic at just his personality, his play calling, just his entire kind of package is very Spurrier-esque. And I talked to Shane Matthews, who happened to call me about something. And he's an Ole Miss guy. He grew up in Mississippi. His dad played at Ole Miss. His mom was a cheerleader at Ole Miss. So he knows Ole Miss. And he just said the brand here is just superior. He's going to like a lot of people like to point to his inability to win the big game. Well, he's going to get a different type of player here. And on Monday, you guys saw the quotes from him. And they asked him, like, what's it take today to win? And he said, well, you got to be invested for one. Which I don't think will be an issue on that NIL wise. And the Grove Collective, Ole Miss's collective, is very strong. But this Florida Victorious will get a lot stronger if Lane Kiffin's the coach. But then he mentioned, but you know, you still got to recruit, and kids look at stadium capacity, tradition, Heisman's, national titles. Just checking down the list of stuff that the Gators offer that his school, current school, does not. So that wasn't even cryptic. I mean, that was just, you know, hitting you in the face. That, like, this is, he's just talking about the Florida job. And I, at this point, will be pretty stunned if Lane Kiffin doesn't come to Gainesville, honestly.
I think that's,
that might be some breaking news right there.
No, I mean, I think everyone kind of will be stunned. I mean, we're all going to be like, oh, on the back foot if that doesn't happen. And then who's next? Which we, I don't even think we need to get into, because I think it's going to be him. You know, we don't need to be talking about Eli Drinkwitz and Jed Fish and Jeff Brom, who all lost embarrassingly this past weekend. I mean, Drink got, you know, run. Fish lost at a horrible Wisconsin program, and Louisville lost to Cal. So it's going to be Lane. I mean, we've been saying that. You hear things that it's just, the hard part is the timetable and him somehow being able to coach a college football playoff team of guys he's brought together, surely has affection for. He's got to love a guy like Trinidad Chambliss, his story. He's got guys, you know, this has been a great team and great experience. And unless they somehow fall on their face this weekend, which isn't happening, and then lose to a team that's won one out of its last 18 SEC games, Mississippi State, they're going to the playoff. And then how does he navigate all of that? And what is Ole Miss going to allow, really? Are they going to pull a Saban on him and be like, hey, look, you're going to another school, see ya? I don't think they would. But you remember when he went to FAU before the 2016 title game, and Saban flipped to Sark, and they lost. I mean, it was a last-second touchdown pass down in Tampa from Deshaun Watson to Hunter Renfro. Dramatic loss. But if Lane had been calling plays that night, I mean, Alabama probably would have won that game, or very well could have.
So you kind of touched on my question for you, Edgar. It seems like some of these national guys that have commented on the Florida and Lane Kiffin dance that's going on right now, whether it's Pete Thamel talking about, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to be back in Oxford and it's a matter of timing and a matter of whether he would go to Florida or LSU. Mm-hmm. And then Brett McMurphy this morning kind of insinuating the same sorts of things of would he go, would he not go? How would it get announced with the playoff kind of looming? Do you have an educated guess on how the timing ends up working out? Do you think that it could get publicly announced and then him coach Ole Miss after it's been announced? Or how do you see it playing out timing-wise?
I hear both things. A lot of people are like, oh, yeah, it's going to happen. So that, by the way, that November 28th is going to be one epic day of college football in the SEC. My Lord. You get the Egg Bowl at noon, Georgia Tech at like 3:30, and a 7:30 game with Texas A&M and Texas, which, you know, Texas wins that, could get in the playoff and give SEC five teams maybe potentially. But anyway, so is he really going to like do something that day, that weekend? I mean, it makes sense, but man, you're just, it's a tough one to do. I don't know what you do then. And then Florida, you know, isn't making a bowl game. So players are going to have no idea what's going on. Now, they can't hit the portal until January 3rd, but they can get pilfered. And I'm not – look, I don't think everybody – I heard Jackson the other day, just all 85 can leave, and I don't care. Well, I don't know if you – Jaden Ball and Vernell Brown, like you said, probably won't because of legacy. But I don't think anyone wants to see – Jaden Baz, you know, freaking, you know, his 230-pound freaking self leaving, you know, they want to watch what his butt walking out the door. I mean, Jaden Baz is a good piece. I mean, can you imagine what Lane Kiffin can do with him with his pass-catching skills and getting him in space? My Lord, he could have 1,500 yards from scrimmage next year playing in that offense, at least.
It also, it sounded like from Lane's comments on the SEC teleconference.
Oh, yeah.
He's intrigued by DJ Lagway.
Well, he was raving about Baugh, though. One of the best in the nation. Yeah, and DJ, sure. And I mean, he would be a reclamation project, but I think DJ Lago's been hurt.
I agree.
Mark Long got killed for reporting that on the radio. He is hurt. That pass he threw to Sturdivant, I mean, it was like a javelin throw. He took like three hops and looked like Dave O'Brien in the 88 Olympics in the decathlon. I mean, it was a horrible effort. And he's clearly not spinning the ball or doing any of the stuff he did last year. James DeVirgilio had some stat. I saw Jimmy D at the gym tonight. We were talking about it. I said, you're getting a lot of you know, currency out of that number, 28% downfield throws, down from 64% last year. So, and we saw it last year. The guy was just attacked downfield with the best of them. And now he's just like, you know, just sailing it like in the general direction, you know. It's like hit and hope, they say in golf, right, Jackson? Hit and hope.
Yeah, you and I are well too familiar with that aspect of the game.
One of the questions I had for you about the timing issue that we were discussing a little bit with Silk, and then we were discussing in our group. If Florida hired a GM, would the GM start to do some of the player retention or the evaluation, you know, obviously on Lane Kiffin's behalf while he's coaching in the playoffs? And is that something you're hearing might happen?
No. I think that there's some active pursuit of a GM role. And I think that that's how you do kind of retain and attain players and keep the recruiting class together and things. Another way too is you keep Billy Gonzalez. Now, maybe everyone's like, you know, some people are like, about Billy. Billy's handled this thing as professionally as you can. Look, he reads off the stats and people make fun of that, whatever. I think the guy's been great. And I don't think he would be a bad guy to keep around. Now, I don't know that you have him coaching your receivers. Maybe you do. I have no issue either way. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, he's coaching the receivers poorly. I don't think he is. I think he's coaching them pretty well. I think he always kind of does. But he's been a part of elite offenses going back to 2001, too, with Urban at Bowling Green, Utah's unbeaten team in 04, the Gators run, Mississippi State when it reached number one with Dak Prescott here in 2020, 2019. I mean, Billy's seen a lot of good football, a lot of good offensive football. He knows what he's doing, and he also knows these players, and he could stick around and kind of help keep some of it going forward and help also be a voice for the GM. And he knows the lay of the land better than anyone in that building, probably.
Edgar, you were talking Lane a few minutes ago, and you mentioned his quote about kind of all the things that go into like what makes a good job. It was the capacity of the crowd, proximity to talent. I mean, was that a intentional quote, you think?
Like I said, it wasn't cryptic. It was like Heisman's, national titles, tradition, recruiting footprint, etc. It was like check, 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 Florida. And it sure sounded like you don't have any of that at Ole Miss.
Right.
Right? I mean, 1960, they won a national title pre-segregation, I mean, integration. With Johnny Vaught, they had back-to-back 10-win seasons then, 59-60. They famously lost like Billy Cannon, that punt return you guys I'm sure have seen, 1959 LSU, where he won the Heisman based on that play. They could have gone back-to-back. But the point is, they won two 10-win seasons. Lane wins Saturday, first time in program history, three straight 10-win seasons. Now, they are playing 12 games. But he's doing things there that haven't been done. And he still knows that it's in spurts. He even said it in the financing aspect. He's like, if you look at the best baseball teams, pro organizations, he kind of implied like, hey, you're going to have great stories popping up here and there, but the sustained success are the ones that have the resources. Does he believe he has that at Ole Miss? I don't know. I mean, the Grove Collective strong, but does it have the alumni base? It certainly doesn't have the brand and all the other things we talked about. It doesn't have. So
you hear all of the comparisons, but that Kiffin draws to Spurrier, it makes you wonder if he looks at his tenure at Ole Miss kind of the way Spurrier looked at his tenure at South Carolina, and how, you know, in order for the South Carolina to have happened and for him to have unprecedented success at South Carolina after his time at Florida, I wonder if he views, you know, the Florida job is that ultimate crown jewel of his career. I mean, South Carolina had three straight 11 win seasons under Spurrier, you know, in those early 2010s. I wonder if Lane kind of sees that as, you know, South Carolina is to Ole Miss as Spurrier's Florida is to what Lane's Florida would be. And, you know, obviously Spurrier never won an SEC at South Carolina. I think he only made it to Atlanta once there. So I think that that's another example of that different levels to certain programs, you know, in the SEC.
Well, in fairness, or in reality, actually, I guess you should say not fairness. I mean, Florida had two. I was saying this to Jackson on the phone one day. If you, let's say 40-year mark, 1985, who are the 10 best coaches in college football in the last 40 years? You know, Tom Osborne, Bobby Bowden, you know,
Saban, Urban, Spurrier.
But I know I was going to like throw a few more in there, Kirby, but Urban and Spurrier. So you have two of the top 10 coaches in the last 40 years. Okay. Is that, that's what it takes to win a national title in a lot of cases. I mean, Dabo's probably on that list because he has two natties. I'm just saying, I mean, you need the elite of the elite to win a national title, plus a lot of things to fall into place. Like I said, I mean, last second touchdown for Clemson, et cetera. I mean, you go through a lot of these things are just on the margins. I mean, the cock block, they wouldn't have gotten in the championship game without that. And, you know, and be able to jump Michigan at the last second. Because a lot of people thought it was going to be Michigan, Ohio State. Can you imagine how unfair that would have been after you saw what Gators did at Ohio State? I was at that game. They weren't even, shouldn't have been on the same field with Florida that night. So, yeah, it's tough to win them, and it takes the best of the best at Florida to do it thus far. And then maybe Lane proves to be among the best of the best here. Maybe he does. Everyone thought he was going to be at one point, right? I mean, he's an NFL coach at age 31 or 2. He succeeds Pete Carroll at USC, gets a Tennessee job at like 35, stays a year. Ends up at USC succeeding Pete Carroll, and then he's kind of off in the wilderness a bit. But Nick Saban, man, didn't we talk about this on here? Where Nick Saban was at SEC Media Days bemoaning up tempo in 2013. Oh my God, killing the sport. Players are going to get hurt. Gus Malzahn, you're ruining football. All this. Year later, he hires Lane Kiffin, and they are just up and running up tempo. And win a national title the following year. So Kiffin he's elite everywhere he's been in some ways. I mean, the results don't show it, but it's like he was going to be this guy. Maybe it just took him a longer time to get to that guy. And he talked today about like non-negotiables. Like he was talking about his yoga and how like he's got non-negotiables in life now that he didn't have 4 or 5 years ago. To be the best he can be. And he's like, look, we asked that from the players. Why can't we ask it from ourselves? So I think he's like serious now about like his craft and his legacy and all this stuff. And I think he can do something at Florida that he just can't do at Ole Miss.
We have great yoga studios over in Gainesville, Edgar. Trust me. I can vouch for that. You mentioned.
I can vouch for the yoga pants in Gainesville. I don't know about the studios.
You mentioned the career arc of Lane. Sorry, you mentioned the career arc of Lane. What about from an NFL
standpoint? What, you think you could go to the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned college.
I don't know. I think he loves college football, right? I don't think he's an NFL guy, man. It's become so transactional at this level. Sure, it's still not the NFL. And he's really figured it out. He's got to think in his mind, man, I kind of have figured out the portal. 4 straight top 3 classes in the portal. He can put teams together fast. It's like Dan Wetzel was saying, it's about teams now, not programs. So if he comes to a program, he can build a program and a team here. You get the best of both worlds potentially. Whereas at Ole Miss, I don't know if you can do that.
I always have thought that thinking someone might leave for the NFL should be a pro, that, you know, there's only 32 of those head coaches. And so if he were to leave for the NFL in 5 years, that means he's probably been really successful at Florida.
Oh, you're saying that he might leave?
Okay. I mean, I kind of take it
that, that was Hunter's question, that he could leave. He might go from here to the NFL. Is that what you meant? Or he might be Alliance or something now.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson Dart obviously was quarterback last year, needs a head coach. I don't think he'll do it, but I think it's worth asking. Obviously, I saw a couple things out there. If the Dolphins job opens up, you know, Giants just opened up this past week. You know, worth asking. He's done it before.
Hey, look, man, I don't know what Lane Kiffin's thinking. I mean, he dodged us on the conference call. It was did I even like close the loop on that? It was like one. Yeah. I didn't, of course, because
this is just part of your weave.
The tangents just come. So yeah, he was supposed to talk at 150, and they have an open. They have like a 12:10 and 1:10 spot that they just like have it like. So you know, if you need to go like go use the restroom or whatever, if you're like doing the whole call, some writers will listen to the entire like whatever 16 coaches. I don't do that ever. I hop on when I need one, but. So I hopped on at 12, whatever, 50, 45, thinking not central time. And it was Jeff Lebby. And I'm like, ah, crap, I don't need him. So I click off. And next thing I know, someone texts me and goes, we missed Kiffin. I'm like, what? He went at the 1:10 break spot. So no Florida writers were on there. So he didn't have to like deal with any questions about Florida. I was going to ask him about Juice Kiffin and his Twitter presence. I mean, I wanted to kind of hear what he had to say about the retweet of DJ as I was starting to say that. So he like just totally dodged us. And I'm going to be there on Saturday night, though, and I'm definitely going to go to Lane and not Billy Gonzalez and the Gators, I guess, unless they upset Ole Miss, which is probably near next to impossible. Here's a great stat for you guys, by the way. UF has been an underdog by more than 15 points 4 times now under Napier. Georgia 2022, LSU 2023, Texas last year. Otherwise, 15-point dogs is 3 times since 4-8 in 2013. So 8 year, what is that? How many years is that? 11 seasons? No, whatever. Whatever it would be, it's like 8 or 10. Whatever. It's a lot of seasons.
Yeah.
They're already 4 times under Napier. It's just, you know, I think they're going to get their teeth kicked in. After what we saw last week, I mean, sure, they're going to be auditioning for their next head coach, potentially. They're going to be motivated. But this game could get away fast. This team is really explosive, this offense. Dual threat quarterback, great running back. They're going to be coming to Florida from all angles. And plus, his play calling and play design are just elite, right?
Yeah. Edgar, you kind of stole my point coming up. This is an audition. I'm sure all the players are online. They see the Kiffin rumors. They probably want Lane Kiffin. I imagine so. So it is a little bit of an audition, especially for DJ Lagway and this offensive unit, the ones that will be playing. I haven't seen the availability report tonight to see who's in or out. But, yeah, 15.5-point dogs. Ole Miss leads the league in 64 scores between scoring drives, between touchdowns and field goals. I think the Gators are 15th with 34 scoring drives, which is just unbelievable to think about. You know, the offenses this group grew up with watching. What do the Gators got to do to pull off an upset Saturday night in Oxford, where I think four of us on this podcast will be Saturday night in Vault Hemingway?
Look, I'm dominating this thing. You guys, I want to hear from you guys a little bit. Dude, I'm looking. Caleb Banks is now up to doubtful. Why'd he move up? That's bizarre.
Really?
Why would he even want to play? If I'd him, I'm taking a red shirt and just getting healthy and coming having a season next year and getting my draft stock up. But because he hadn't ready to go get drafted after doing.
You think there's a chance he could come back for another year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I do.
That would be.
I don't know how old he is. What, he can't be more than 22.
For some reason, I thought he was a redshirt junior already. So I guess he could probably get a medical.
I got the roster right here. But yeah, no, I want to hear you guys, man. I'm just like sucking up all the oxygen. I mean, they keep, you know, guys, I mean, they run Jaden Ball. They keep that offense off the field. They time of possession, get a couple turnovers like they did last year, right? I mean, maybe they could do something.
Yeah, we saw it against Georgia. I mean, that's kind of the recipe, right? Try to run the ball a little bit, get a couple turnovers, and stay in it early.
But exactly. And that seems tough. This Ole Miss team's better than last year's Ole Miss team. Not at quarterback, but overall it looks like it's – well, I mean, maybe it isn't. I mean, that defensive line last year was pretty damn good. So,
well, I was going to say last year's team might have been the best roster in the country. And, you know, we're really impressed with Ole Miss and everything we've seen from them. But they're capable of laying stinkers too, especially later in the season. Things kind of start tightening up for them.
No, you're right.
I mean, this is the same team that beat Washington State 23-21 and just kind of rock-fighted with them for 60 minutes. So I tend to think that this roster, this team's kind of let go of the rope. But – you know, things can get kind of tight if, you know, you fumble a ball, you fumble an exchange, you throw an uncharacteristic interception, a ball gets tipped. So, yeah.
I overstated that, but this team just seems like it's playing better. But actually, at home, I meant to bring this up, they're winning by an average of only 9 points in SEC games. And it's like South Carolina, Arkansas, and Kentucky or something. The combined record of those teams is like, it's not good. I mean, it's a 10-17. So, you know, it's like in SEC games, that is.
Unfortunately, we don't help the record coming into the stadium.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is they're winning by an average of 9 points against teams with a combined 10-17 SEC record. So they're not the best team in the league or anything. And last year at times they look like it. I'm trying to look at like their turnovers.
I know that their quarterback's only thrown like 2 interceptions. I think he's taking care of the ball pretty well.
Yeah, they've lost 11 turnovers, but
yeah, I'm actually got that pulled up right now, Edgar, trying to see. Gators are 87th in the country in turnover margin, and I'm trying to find where.
Ole Miss is -3, Florida's -2. So I don't know where all those interceptions came from, because Chambliss has two all year. Anyway, they're just going to need to time of possession, turnovers, field possession, hidden yardage, all those things where, like you called it, a rock fight, where you muck up a game and somehow like pull it out, which is what they did in the Swamp last year. I mean, courtesy of a half dozen plus drops and 2 late interceptions, and they still won by only 7 in the Swamp, which was rocking that day for Senior Day. So it's hard for me to get my mind around an upset this week.
Yeah, they're gonna have to have good things happen in the first like 20-ish minutes. Like, that's basically what happened against Georgia. You know, they went down and Georgia scored on the very first drive, and it looked like they could possibly run away with it. But then as the game progressed a little, we hit a big play to Trey Wilson for a touchdown and kind of give it some life. And then coming back, I think it was on the next possession or maybe right after, we get a tip pass and Devin Moore catches an interception and we take the lead. And the roster is so talented. I know that they, you know, it looked like they quit. Billy Gonzalez said they didn't. But I just think that if you get the competitive juices flowing, then the talent takes over, because you naturally want to win the game. But you got to be in position. So I thought that the Kentucky game, whenever I went back and sort of listened to things and thought about it, it was like, we were in the game and it was 7, I think it was 10-7. We were driving. And then we throw a pick and we have the fumble. I think it was on back-to-back possessions, and it sort of just got away. And this staff has never been able to play from behind, especially when they need DJ, who, you know, he's hurt and he seems to have zero confidence and he can't just sling it all over the place. You got to put him in good positions. And so, you know, if we don't have that fumble with KD Daniels and we're able to make it a 14-10 game, then things might look different, you know, but I think they got to have some good luck thing happen to tilt the thing in our favor. And if we can get to halftime with it being a 1-possession game, then the Gators will be live to win the game outright, I think.
Very optimistic view.
That's usually what happens. I get very down to the dumps Sunday and Monday, and then I gradually work my way back up. And come kickoff, I'll be saying that we're going to beat Lane Kiffin and we're going to keep him out of the playoffs. And all the timetables is.
I'm curious, Jacob, who hadn't said hardly anything, because, you know, No, because I mean, I've been babbling, but here, I'm curious, do you think it'd be better for Florida if Lane loses, doesn't make the playoff, and then they can get him? Or would it be kind of like, okay, we're getting him, but I mean, he kind of like doesn't ever finish off a season the way, you know, you'd like to see your next coach finish off a season? Because Florida's, yeah, I mean, Urban Meyer knew how to finish off a season. I mean, it's like you want to get a guy who's like, now, he went to a bowl game and already committed to Florida, but that was a bowl game. It wasn't a playoff.
I think as a Florida fan, I think there would be that question in your mind. Like if you lost to an interim head coach as a 15-point favorite,
yeah,
I mean, that's going to be a kind of glaring. But I think as Florida fans, like if you look at Ole Miss's record the last 5 years and put that in Gainesville, I think everybody's happy. And I think you talk yourself into maybe the more talent and resources, maybe that gets you over the hump and finishing those seasons. I think regardless, if you're Lane, you probably know at some point what you're going to do. And so I don't know that the playoff, if he goes into the playoff, I think he's going to know one way or the other he's staying or going. And I don't think that's going to affect his decision-making too much.
Well, I don't even affect his, but do you think it's better for Florida to get him in here? Like you get
the sure thing.
Two losses.
Yeah, the sure thing's better than no thing, for sure. But in reality, I just don't think that's going to – he's going to have his decision before that first playoff game, I would imagine.
And it's just not Lane that's dealing with the distractions. I mean, his entire locker room is as well. I mean, these kids are still 18, 20-year-old kids with a lot of uncertainty in their future with their head coach essentially at the foot out the door, right? So – I mean, it's very easy for them to get distracted in all the news leading up to the Florida week, here at seeing all the headlines and them uncertain if they will even have a coach next year. So it's possible Ole Miss can lay an egg. I wasn't too surprised by the Kentucky thrashing and the kind of way we laid down a little bit, because you do have that emotional loss to Georgia when you're leading the game with potentially the ability to put it away with 7 minutes left to go up two scores, especially a week and a half after your head coach got fired. So maybe with that audition mindset for the Gators locker room, I'm pretty optimistic Saturday night that we cover and hopefully have a chance to maybe steal something late.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not optimistic at all about that.
those first couple possessions, I think, are going to, you know, it's at the point of the season where Ole Miss every week is watching, you know, the playoff rankings and seeing what their potential matchups would be. Like they'd be matched up with, I think it was Texas coming to Vaught-Hemingway Stadium based off this week's rankings. That starts weighing on you. And when you're a 15-point favorite against a talented live dog, you know, that has a couple good things start going their way early. Like I said, a tipped interception, a fumbled handoff, something like that goes the wrong way. You start getting tight, you know, even if it's not the Florida game, it could be in the Egg Bowl in Starkville the morning after Thanksgiving. I think that there's a lot of tightness that kind of can develop when your goals and your end of season is right there. Everything that you've played all season for is right there. And your coach has these distractions. Your team's worried about, you know, whether – you know, he's going to actually end up leaving or what's going to end up happening after the game. I think that's a lot going on, you know, in the mind of a group of mercenaries that's mostly made up out of the transfer portal that isn't playing for their patch, that's playing for their coach. And I think that's a something that is early on in this game and then early on again in the Egg Bowl to watch out for. If Ole Miss starts tightening up, things start not being as crisp and as smooth as they've been for the first 2.5 months of the season.
What do you think about the audition aspect for the Ole Miss players? Like,
yeah, to go with him?
Yeah. It's like, so you're lining up on Saturday night and you're like, all right, I'm going to just, you know, outplay this guy I'm playing against because I want Lane or Coach Kiffin to take me.
Yeah, think about the quarterback.
Ride like Cignetti it's James Madison. Indiana's a step. I mean, Florida's a step up from Ole Miss, but – a little bit different. You're going to the Big Ten from whatever James Madison's in. But
it's big practice, Edgar. I actually like to think about it that way. We're doing O-line, D-line drills, right? Yeah. They're all lines going against
one-on-ones.
Yeah, I like that.
It's only the second time DJ's playing good-on-good for
– Yeah, that's right. I think we'll use that in the first. I'm going to put an Edgar on that.
You know what?
First spring practice in, like, what, 3 years?
Yeah.
Say that again?
It'll be like our first televised spring practice in 3 years.
Yeah, well, it is interesting to think about. Like, maybe they're thinking that way too. Like, hey, I want to come along for the ride. I don't know. Oxford's a nice little spot, but I'd rather be at the University of Florida myself. But I'm sure Ole Miss is plenty fun.
Yeah. Last thing on a lane for me, Edgar, you talked about the Florida fan perspective. Mm-hmm. If Ole Miss loses this game or if they lose in the Egg Bowl, think about the Ole Miss fan perspective. There's probably going to be some, I don't know, I think they'd be pretty frustrated after 22. He kind of flirts with the Auburn job and they lose a few games in November after a really promising start. I think that would be just as interesting to watch their kind of reaction as Florida fans.
Well, they're definitely reacting to our friend Jackson Raymer on Twitter.
All the time.
All the me, Will, a few other folks that we know, we're getting harassed online. And I know you're going to be walking around the Grove Saturday, Edgar, potentially interviewing Ole Miss fans to talk about the Lane Kiffin topic. So just warning you, be careful.
I am. I mean, I'm an old man. So I got the gray beard going. I'm just going to be like, they're not going to beat up some old guy, but I'm probably not going to go pick out like the frat boys doing, you know, keg stands. I'll go talk to like the old people at the barbecue going and maybe get a free sandwich out of it and a little chat about the good old Archie Manning and, you know, how nice it is to have Lane and what a nice boy he is. And I sure hope he doesn't go and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm not going into the mosh pit for those interviews. Trust me.
you'll be fine, Edgar. They have very strict rules in the Grove. It's a wine and cheese crowd. Worst thing they can do too is throw a couple red Solo cups at you. You'll be all right.
No, and Mississippi hospitality is something. I went there for the Mississippi State game in 2018. Went over a day early, paid Mossy Creek. You remember when I did that, Jackson?
Yep.
And nicest people ever. They're just so nice. It's incredible. So
they might have a different edge this weekend.
They might. That's what I'm wondering. But yeah, they're typically pretty hospitable people. So we'll find out.
I think we're going to get a few comments on this show. I think the thumbnail on YouTube is going to be win or lose, we're going home with your coach or something along those lines. So
trying to bring them a win and a coach.
Exactly. But real quick, let's do our score predictions for Saturday night. We'll go around the horn. I'll start. I don't see the Gators win as much as I will believe once I step inside that stadium Saturday afternoon. It's probably going to be a bloodbath. Lane Kiffin's going to show off his play calling skill set against a depleted Gator team, and Ole Miss walks away 41-13. Jake?
Yeah, I was going to go 37-17, Ole Miss. I think kind of along the lines of Jackson was talking, Lane's a smart guy, man, and he can call him up as good as any coach in college football, and he's heard all the noise. He was asked about it some this week. I think I think the loss last year too that kept him out of the playoff. I just think he'll be a kind of a man on a mission with his team this week.
I got 23-21 Gators. Trace Mack kicks a 60-yard field goal as time expires to win the game.
The optimist.
Hey, history repeats itself all the time. It's all cyclical. The last time these two teams played, the Gators won 24-17. The next time these two teams play, the Gators are going to win 24-17.
I'm not as optimistic. I'll go 34 current Lane Kiffin versus 17 future Lane Kiffin.
I picked it in the paper 45-20 Ole Miss and said for things not to get out of hand, he's going to have to take it easy on Florida, honestly. Bianchi picked it 52-10 Ole Miss, so he doesn't think they're going to take it easy. But, I mean, that's only one more touchdown. But
Bianchi might be trying to get the clicks out of people.
No, I mean, it's Bianchi. But look, this team is so explosive, and they got a 1,000-yard running back by probably the end of the first quarter. Four receivers, one's a tight end, four pass catchers averaging 15 plus. 15 yards of catches these days, old school, it was like 17 or 18 was like elite. 15 is pretty elite now, the way they throw the football, shorter routes and things. You have four of them, including a tight end. Florida's not great covering tight ends, so Childs might be pretty good at that as he develops. But I will just say they just got too many weapons and a guy who knows how to take advantage of mismatches and scheme you up. It just doesn't, and Chambliss is playing lights out right now. I don't know. It seems like it's going to be it's a big ass to think Florida's going to go in there and give this team a game.
Well, I hope we're all wrong except for Will, because do not let the Breakfast Boys be inside that stadium as 15.5-point dogs and leave with a win. I don't know if we will be back in Jacksonville or Ocala, Florida come Monday morning, because we might need some bailout money if that is the case.
Well, I got a Venmo account, so I'll help you out.
Edgar, you still got a few minutes? We're going to jump into hoops?
No, I do.
Yeah, so this week, obviously, Tuesday night, Gators, 17.5-point favorites, escape against a much-improved FSU team under their first-year head coach, 78-76. I thought there was some real good things offensively, defensively as well. I think we held Florida State to 36 second-half points. I thought we guarded the perimeter a little bit better, especially the last 6-7 minutes. What are your takeaways from Tuesday night's win?
Edgar. Well, I mean, my big takeaway is Thomas Houck is just an absolute beast. It's so funny. I mean, did I tell the story on here?
I don't think so.
Oh, so I'm sitting there at some game. Like, you know, remember Missouri 5 minutes before fouled out in like 5 minutes? Remember that last year, the game they lost at home?
Yep.
And then Tennessee, when they lost by like 30, that ugly game that came out of nowhere. Was that last year?
Yeah.
They have one like bad game. And he was just bricking shots. So then he's playing here early February against someone. It's just looking just kind of I'm sitting next to Brockway, Kevin Brockway and Mark Long. I'm like, man, this dude is like an 8 to 12 minute guy. I'm just getting tired of this. He should not be playing so much. From there, he just became like one of the best stories in college basketball on an incredible team. So I ate my words on that one, and he's incredible. I looked at Mark last night, and I said, this game, it's a good game. Like, it's fairly well played. I mean, not everyone's hitting shots or whatever, but it was a pretty good game. But it was kind of like Florida just didn't have any juice, right? It felt like they were, like, letting them in. I said, someone needs to take over here for Florida. Next thing I know, Houck's doing that move where he's almost, like, cradling it coming down layup. Hits a three the next time. Mark's like, well, there you go. And then Boogie gets involved, and you got an 11-0 run. And Mark had just said they haven't had a run yet. So we looked smart for once. But the Houck is this – he's an incredible player. I mean, my big – so you have a guy like that, and he gets Boogie going last night a good bit. And all you can win a lot of games, but, man – I mean, it's a sport now that is three pointers and three footers, and a lot of teams play that NBA style, and they are not doing the three pointer very well. I mean, Xavier Lee, a lot of guys repped him. I saw on Twitter he did have 7 rebounds and 6 assists. So he plays hard and he keeps his head in the game, but they're going to have to start knocking down shots. I just don't know who it is. Right? I mean, do you see someone who's like an elite shooter on this team? I mean, maybe someone develops into that. It sure doesn't look like they have one. I mean, Klavzar did hit a big three last night. He could be that guy in like spurts, but not like in a starting role. I don't know.
To your point, Edgar, about the big run, something that we talked about pretty much every game last year with the guards that we had was how you just knew the inevitable avalanche from Florida's offense was going to come. You know, they were going to get a steal, a live ball turnover, get down the court, shoot a three, make it or miss it. You have a big down there, run in the floor, get the rebound. And all of a sudden it was an 11-0, 14-0 run. You know, last year we had that ridiculous like 30-0 run against Wichita State at one point. So I think that this year's team is missing that explosiveness, and it's because of how poorly they've shot so far. There was, I think, a majority of the game we were doubling up Florida State and rebounding, but the issue was we were shooting, you know, 15% from three, and we had I think like 10 turnovers to their five at one point. So you don't really
beat your ass inside. There is no doubt about that.
Absolutely, and that's kind of the thing. When your best asset is your big men and they're rebounding, it makes it a lot more difficult to pull away from teams when you're not able to shoot the ball. Even if you're getting stops, even if you know you're not giving up second chance points and everything else that goes into winning. So the shooting is definitely the biggest concern so far for me. But you know, it's always a good day when you can beat Florida State.
I just think Houck, man, you got a star player. He's the best player on this team. I don't think it's even close. And when you have a guy like that, I'm not saying he's gonna be Walt, but he can roll you in to games, keep you in games, get everyone playing at a little higher level. Because Boogie just kind of rode the wave with him, kind of joined forces and finally got going a little bit. So three games in, man. No panic button pushing here. By the way, someone's texting me here. Zach Goodall, in fact. Caleb Banks' foot is fully healed, he's reporting. Tempting return to play. And he's saying it sounds like I haven't read the article, but it sounds like by this that he wants to he isn't coming back. Like, he wants to get some film out there and maybe, you know, get going to the Senior Bowl and whatever. It makes sense. I mean, he's a fifth year senior. Actually looked well, because I was actually thinking he had a fifth year, he would have to medical and do all that, and then he got 23. But to me, it's like, in a position like that, in like running back, right? Yeah. 23, all right.
Well, I certainly would love it, because we still do have to play for Pride and play for the Patch at home against Tennessee and Florida State. So if we can get, you know, a guy who's going to be a first or second rounder, I'll sign up for that any day. Back to basketball, though, I think that one of the things that I noticed is that in the second half, Boogie and Xavien seemed to take the shots that they had been passing up a lot in the first half. And when they were passing them up, and they did this against Arizona too, it seemed like they would almost dribble into a turnover and try to make an extra pass that wasn't there instead of going up with it. But I think if they just take the shots, even if they don't go in, we are so elite with the offensive rebounding that it kind of just naturally opens things up, because you have Chinyelu and Condon and Handlogged and just grabbing rebounds and putting them in or kicking them out for another open shot. And the statistics on a second three-pointer right after you've missed the first one is like your rate goes way up. So hopefully they can learn to shoot. I think that if Florida can make eight threes a game, which seems like a tall task at this point, but I think if they're able to do that throughout pretty consistently throughout this tough non-conference and SEC play, that they're going to be a one or a two seed, because we're so dominant defensively. We're dominant on the boards, and you know, we make everything inside. So if we can start hitting a few shots that prevent teams like Florida State from hanging around, we're gonna be in some serious business.
What do you guys make Alex Condon? I mean, that was a slop fest down the stretch with them.
The one thing I'll say on Condon, and Devin pointed this out last night, he had a ball that he threw to the corner last year. I think a guard probably floats to the corner. Boogie stayed in his spot, and it was almost like he expected him to move open.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean,
he's making like a wraparound pass to like hang Logton or something.
Yeah, six turnovers is just. It was the same against Arizona. So that's the biggest concern, turnovers.
He's got career-high turnovers in two games now.
Yeah.
I think just the inability to shoot the basketball and spread out the offense is just making everything so congested down there inside the paint, where he's just having trouble locating those shooters or having confidence getting them out there. I don't know, but it certainly feels that way right now without having – that Walter Clayton or Will Richard or Elijah Marcus. Tommy Houck can obviously shoot the three ball. We haven't seen Condon do it a whole lot this year. He doesn't look confident when he gets an open look from the top of the perimeter. But, we're missing that guy that can kind of take the top off the defense and open things up.
I also think it makes it a little bit clunky when your three bigs are all have chemistry with one another, and then the two new guards are trying to fit in with the established chemistry that the three bigs have. And I think that, you know, the bigs aren't comfortable with the guards yet. The guards aren't comfortable with the bigs yet. And it's making the entire offense look clunky. And it's, you know, being exacerbated by not hitting open shots. So I think that, you know, we're three games in. We just won a rivalry game. It was clunky. We kind of knew that this team was going to go through these sort of growing pains, especially early. I think that one of the things that I've mentioned to you guys a few times now is the bye games this year are really going to benefit these guys. I don't think that it's going to be a, you know, obviously we win by, you know, 40 against UNF already, but last year was just kind of like exhibitions every time we played bye games. I don't necessarily think we're going to lose bye games with our bigs, but I think that they're going to go a long way in developing that chemistry as, you know, we get through this non-conference schedule. Because if the shooting doesn't improve, I think we got some ass whoopings coming down the pike, because you play Duke, you play UConn, you play this Alabama style of basketball. If you can't shoot with some of these teams, they can run you out of the gym. So developing that chemistry in these bye games is going to benefit us, you know, not just in conference play, but with some of these marquee non-conference games that we have coming up.
The other thing real quick about Condon is that he's at his best when he is running in transition and establishing himself in right under the basket before anybody else is there. He runs the floor so well. But both Arizona and FSU were hitting shots like crazy. Like, it seemed like FSU made way more threes than I thought they had when they showed the stats at halftime. But Arizona hit a lot of shots, made a lot of baskets off the pick and roll. FSU shot pretty well despite some pretty good defense. And so I think that them making shots on the one end is forcing us to get into the half court, which really isn't his game. It wasn't last year. It was when he struggled in the NCAA tournament. He was a little bit hurt. But, you know, it kind of is like what happens in the bye games where they miss baskets, we're able to get out in transition. So I think if we're able to do that and get some good luck with some missed shots and sort of get him into a rhythm, he seems like one of those rhythm players where once he goes, he's all over it and it looks really not really special. But he kind of has to get into the game that way, I think, by just running up and down and getting some confidence with some good shots going in.
And Hunter, look, we're going to be everyone's Super Bowl this year as a defending champs. We've beaten Florida State, I think, four straight years, now five. Todd Golden hasn't lost to them. Their new coach wants to make a statement. We get Miami and Jacksonville Sunday night, a revamped program with a lot of talent. It's nice to learn from a win, but when we're used to scoring 95 and beating teams by double digits with last year's roster, what are your expectations, you know, having some of these – one possession or two possession wins, but learning from a win moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. To your point, I mean, as national champs, you're going to get everyone's best shot. And when you play a team like FSU and now Miami, you're playing in-state teams that, you know, a lot of these kids grew up in AAU circuits with these guys. I know we have some guys from outside of Florida, but you're going to get the best shot and it's personal to them. From a learning standpoint, I really like to see them take care of the ball more. I know shooting's what everyone's going to, but I think you guys all touched on it. It's game three, okay? You know, there's a lot of time for them to find their groove. Lee, he had a lot of space. Well, he wasn't making them. He was creating space and getting open shots. I think things like that, hopefully, as they get more comfortable in the system, like Dev mentioned, with the bigs who have done it together, that will come. The turnovers, to me, were a little concerning. I know Todd touched on it in his post game a little bit with Condon. It felt like he felt like three possessions in a row, he went down in crunch time where it mattered most and just threw the ball into the stands. I know Jake mentioned the one where it looked like the guard wasn't moving with them, but turnovers to me is what I'm hoping they're able to clean up and learn from that game. But I am really excited to see how they come out. I think, a close one like that, and then you get another inside opponent. Be exciting to see how they come out.
Yeah, Boogie Flan, 7-1 assist turnover ratio this year so far. So I've been content with his play, but pointing out a tweet from Florida Basketball Hour, we talked about the shooting percentage for the first two games as a team from last year to this year, how they're pretty similar, but we knew what we kind of had in that backcourt. But Walter Clayton's first month at Florida included shooting 25% from three in his first three games, a 5-turnover game and a loss to Virginia, and a stretch where he went 2-for-14 from deep and a loss to Baylor and Wake Forest. So, you know, we might be hard on Xavier Lee now, but you know, getting used to a new program, new style of play, new arenas, a much bigger program he's playing at than he was at Princeton. Edgar, what are your thoughts of, you know, allowing these guys, despite them making money now, you know, a lot of money come here to play here at Florida, but allowing them to also have that growing room.
Well, and Walter Clayton, I definitely think he, like you're saying, he developed. I was looking at that game because you were talking about Wake Forest, and I think, I mean, I thought those two games he ended up with a lot of points. Was it Virginia? What was it, Virginia said? Because that game was, I remember, kind of a disaster down the stretch. Remember he kind of blew that game?
Yep.
They lost 73-70. And a lot of people were like, man. Yeah, and Wake Forest, they lost that game too. That was, what, was Wilbekin's brother on that team or something? Was that Mitchell Wilbekin was on that team?
I think he was on the team before then. I think it was, was Tyree Appleby on that team?
Oh, maybe.
It was Tyree Appleby.
Okay. That was when Zion Pullum was – he was ineligible, I think, for both of those games.
Well,
so Walt was the primary ball handler.
But the point is, Walt was like, I mean, 11 with Baylor where they lost. You know, it's – yeah, there are going to be some growing pains with a new guy raising his game to a level, another level. I don't see the athleticism from Lee particularly of Clayton – just the physicality, but he is a pretty quick, crafty, kind of savvy player. And Boogie, I thought, looked pretty good last night. I watched him closely because I'd been kind of not impressed. He had a nice baseline drive, if you remember, early in the game. That was a pretty, you know, that was a good, strong drive that was showed a lot of athleticism and attack mode. He definitely takes care of the ball well, organizes the offense. There was a series where he's on the bench. They had a sloppy turnover. Todd went right down angrily almost and grabbed him, if you saw, and got him back in the game. It's just like, get out there and organize these guys. So he definitely knows how to run the operation. It's funny, Isaiah Brown was kind of impressive against who'd they beat? Who was this, a game where Ollie got in, North Florida?
Oh, yeah,
North Florida. Impressive and got a little bit of run last night and didn't do much with it. So, and Todd even said, you're going to get your opportunities, but if you don't make any of them, you're not going to get many of them, right? He's going to be very exacting as he figures this lineup out. He's going to try combinations. Look, I joked with him the other day, and Todd, we trust. I believe he's going to figure it all out. I mean, will Hauk start playing a little bit more four at times to open up the floor a little bit more potentially? Things like that. I don't know. The guard's got to play well, though, if you're going to do that. So lot of thoughts. I'm all over the map. I mean, it's early in the season. We really don't know what's coming. I'm just waiting for Ollie to score his first points. That's all I care about.
Yeah, we got Dartmouth and Colgate, I think, in mid.
Merrimack.
And, well, Merrimack.
The night before Tennessee, Ollie's getting his points.
All right. I speak with Coach Golden before the season. He said Merrimack is a unique defensive team and a program. So hopefully we're up large enough for Ollie to get in. But if not, Dartmouth and Colgate in late December should register his first.
Well, Walt had 26 against Merrimack 2 years ago. I'm looking at it.
All right. Well, we don't have Walter Clayton on this team, so maybe we can find someone to replicate.
He got healthy against Merrimack. All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Edgar, for joining us. First reoccurring guest of the show. So thanks for coming back on.
Well, I appreciate it. You guys do a great job. Thanks for having
me. Thanks, Edgar. This was great.
Thanks, Edgar.
See you guys, man.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Bye.
That was awesome. Broke some news.
Yeah. Breaking news. Caleb Banks potentially coming back, anchoring the middle part of the defensive line, which obviously has been a struggle for us, not allowing the edge rushers their opportunities. We talked about how great they were coming to the year, and they've kind of been underwhelming. So maybe Caleb Banks changes that a little bit.
Yeah. Before we get back into any football talk, just looking around the country in basketball, you know, we've played FSU now. We played Arizona to open the season. There's a couple of interesting games to watch over the next week if you're interested to see, you know, where everybody kind of stacks up. UNF lost to Tennessee tonight, 99-66. So that was kind of, you know, the transitive property doesn't always work, but that's pretty on par with how Florida beat them. But Arizona plays UCLA in LA on Friday night. And then you have Arizona at UConn next week. So some real tests for those guys coming up here in the next 7 days or so. So
that's crazy. You just said UCLA playing Arizona, and I was like, why are they playing a conference game so early? And then it hit me that UCLA is in the Big Ten.
That's a couple top 15 games for them, though, so you can kind of get an idea. You know, it's transitive property stuff, and there's different matchups and everything, so it's a simplistic way to look at it, but you can kind of see how, you know, other elite teams stack up with that Arizona team.
Yeah. Plus, Purdue has struggled a little bit out the gates. And then, you know, BYU with the guy who's going to be the one, I think he's going to be the first overall pick, AJ DeBenista. They were down three the other night. They ended up winning by about 15 or so, but they were down three to some mid-major at halftime. So it happens, you know, it kind of reminds me of Billy Donovan's teams a little bit where, you know, they sort of felt their way through the non-conference, but then when it was playing time in February and March, they were ready to go.
And I really think that these guys are going to get better. Like, I can't imagine them shooting 20% for the season.
The one thing that Edgar said right before he got off that is definitely concerning me is I don't know that Xavien Lee has the physicality. Like, I just imagine the Tennessee guards are going to eat him alive because they always have these big physical or, you know, in Zakai Ziegler's case, this tiny little, you know, short little guy, physical, scrappy dog type guards that'll just eat you alive, and he might end up looking like Urban Klavjar turning the ball over out there against some of these SEC teams. But a long way to go until that time.
What day are you guys getting into to Mississippi?
Well, we Emily and I are driving up Friday, staying in Tupelo, a little change of plans. We're going to stay in the Panhandle Thursday night and then drive up and spend the day in Oxford, but change of plans. So we'll get there Friday. We won't get in Oxford till Saturday. I'm assuming pretty early just to take it all in at the Grove, walk around the Walk of Champions, despite them not being a champion in damn near any sport in the last 50 years. So, yeah, get in Oxford Saturday morning.
Nice. Great first day in the lovely state of Mississippi for me. As soon as we cross the state line, you pass the Jefferson Davis Presidential Library. We wanted to stop for lunch. They had a wide array of different food options. You know, we could have went to Cracker Barrel. We could have went to the Waffle House. And they even had an Applebee's. So great lunch, great first meal in Mississippi. Looking forward to my next couple of days here and getting into Oxford and getting treated with some wonderful Southern hospitality in the Grove. I'm excited to see the Velvet Ditch do its thing. I might not ever want to go home, guys.
Hey, Dev, where are you sitting Saturday night? What's your row and what's your section?
Brother, I will be in the building, and all 45,000 of them can come find us if they want to.
Dev, you'll have to let Lovey and I know if you get to campus early. Lovey and I fly in Friday to tailgate with you guys in the Grove. If you have time to stop by campus early, let me know. Actually, I don't know if I sent a text in the group chat, but Hazel, my 1.5-year-old, just got accepted to the University of Ole Miss. So.
Good for her.
Will, what's up, man? You go on a solo trip to Kentucky, but of course, when the Breakfast Boys head to Oxford together, you decide you are not going to come.
I heard you guys were going, and I decided I needed to sit this one at home.
The Grove is kind of like a gala, though. You know, it's a nice penny loafers and
it's full crowd. It is. Mama Norris decided that we were going on the Bourbon Trail, so you know, who was I to say, wait, what about the Grove and all this stuff? I mean, you know, she in her infinite wisdom, she knew that Billy Napier was in trouble despite the fact that her son picked him to go 12-0 and scheduled a trip around the Bourbon Trail where the Gators also happened to be playing, and not the Grove where we would have just sat there in a big, you know, field thinking, what the heck are we doing here? I hope Lane Kiffin comes.
Hey, Will, it's not too late. Oxford's a super easy place to get to. So if you right,
I do have family in Jackson. I'm sure that I could call them and they could pick me up all the way. What's the nearest airport? Is it Memphis or Tupelo?
It's definitely not Tupelo. You do not want to fly into the state of Mississippi. I would advise you to fly into to Memphis and drive the hour to get to Oxford.
I might have to do that. We'll see. I'm gearing up for Tennessee and FSU at home. So I need a little break from the Gators in person after that Kentucky beatdown.
Yeah, we're gonna give you a week and a half early invite to our tailgate. So mark that on your calendar. All the Breakfast Boys will be over there at your old stomping grounds at law school. So we would appreciate it if you one day stop by.
We'll see. Maybe if Sam flies in.
Yeah, we'll have to get him. Yeah, we might get him to fly in the week of Thanksgiving. Love you. Did you ever go to Ole Miss for basketball when you were covering the team?
Yeah, when I was working for the basketball team, I went there one time. It was the year after the COVID year. And I don't know if you remember, there was a weird instance where I think it was a game at LSU got nixed because of guys catching COVID or whatever. And they had a weird where, like, we played Vanderbilt at home on a Saturday, played at Ole Miss on a Monday night, and it was kind of a weird reschedule thing. We weren't supposed to play them on a Monday night, so the crowd sucked. And then we played Wednesday night at Tennessee. It was three games in, I don't know, 6 days. Basketball atmosphere at the time, they were pretty bad. I mean, they weren't as good as the Mike White Gators. So basketball atmosphere wasn't great, but it's a nice town. I'm excited to see what it's like for a football game.
It's going to be a great time. Great. You know, the good thing about the timing for when we're going to be there is as 15.5 point dogs, you know, you're playing with house money. You don't expect to go. You don't go in expecting to win. Like, it's our podcast going to say.
I don't like that saying. Billy Napier's house money does not feel like house money.
True. but my point is that you're going in and your goal is to bring their coach back with us. And we're not going to have that answer while we're there. So all the trash that we're going to talk is totally unfalsifiable. If any of them do a rebel yell at us or scream hotty toddy at us, we're taking your coach. And they can scream and gnash your teeth all they want. There's nothing they can do about us on Saturday telling them over and over and over again that we're taking their coach.
My favorite part after getting beat by Kentucky was all the Ole Miss fans screenshotting the score. Like, yeah, we know we're bad. That's why we're coming to get your head coach, right? Like, he's going to come to Gainesville and win national championships, something he can't do at his current school.
Yeah, I was very surprised to hear Edgar speak so, like, confidently that it's going to be Lane. Like, you kind of get nervous when people talk in absolutes like that. Like, he said that he didn't even want to discuss backup options.
I think that's the biggest takeaway from having Edgar on. I mean, Edgar's as plugged in as you guys know. I mean, he covers the team as plugged in as anybody down there. And for him to be that confident that's the – not just the route that they're going, but that he thinks they can land them. I mean, that's the takeaway from the whole show.
And I'm just glad we didn't have to listen to 5 minutes of Jed Fish talk tonight.
So it was a rainstorm. I didn't realize.
Edgar threw a little jab at that Washington loss too.
Hey, Edgar better be right about Lane Kiffin. Otherwise, I think the fish is coming to town.
It rains every day in Seattle. He should have been prepared.
They hate it, dude.
I don't know, man. I was focused on Kentucky. I was playing for the patch in Lexington.
Cheering for the patch.
I might as well.
As you've been reminded on Twitter plenty of times, you've never played football.
Touch grass, bro.
Yeah. I was touching a lot of bluegrass out there.
But careful.
Anything else you guys want to discuss before we wrap up?
Mississippi's a lovely place, guys. Just look at this.
We're just excited to get there, man. Excited to get to Oxford and see what it's all about, man. Check off another SEC town.
That's right.
See their hospitality.
Well, boys, we'll see you in the Grove Saturday. And if you're in town, shoot us a text. We got several tents in the Grove, so we'll be jumping around, mingling with each other and some other folks that'll be there. So if you want to run into us or shoot us a text, we'll come hang out for a little bit, have a drink, and if not, we'll see you guys Sunday morning for a recap show. And make sure you guys like, subscribe, follow us on YouTube at Breakfast WTG, along on Twitter / X at Breakfast WTG. Make sure you guys are following us, subscribing, Same thing on Apple and Spotify. So appreciate you guys listening to another episode of Breakfast Bites, and we'll see you again Sunday. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.